Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 7th of September 2015, the podcast that goes downstairs alone or in pairs. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Jonathan Loche. John, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be here.
First of all, a correction from last week. I was talking about these reports and commentaries after the shooting of two reporters in Virginia and saying how they shamefully came out only about 2 hours after the shooting. Sorry, but I got the time wrong. When I looked up the time the shooting occurred, it said 6:46 a.m., but that was on a West Coast news source, so I assumed they converted that to Pacific time, so I converted it back to Eastern, but the shooting occurred at 6:46 Eastern time, so it was really more like 5 hours after the shooting, not two. Not that that really helps them any. They still look like opportunistic psychopaths for doing that, but still, had to correct it.
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
All right, let's recombobulate the news of the bogus. More drama in the continuing saga of Mega Upload. So what happened, of course, was the government seized control of Mega Upload's server so they could copy it and get all the information on it. They relinquished control, but Mega Upload isn't allowed to do anything with it because, of course, there's all this illegal stuff on there. Well, what a lot of people are saying is that since there's things on there that people need that aren't illegal, that are like their own files, that the government should buy the servers to at least preserve the user data and give people an opportunity to get their stuff back. And the government's saying, nope, we don't have to do that.
Not a big shock.
And we're talking about over 1,000 servers from Carpathia Hosting in Virginia. Carpathia was bought out by a company called QTS, and they're asking the court if they can get rid of all this data, which, of course, is just sitting there being expensive for them for no real gain. But users came forward saying they want to preserve their data because they want to be able to get it back, and they don't want that to be destroyed. So Mega Upload's team said, hey, if you're not going to let us do it, then it should be your responsibility to buy the servers and take care of the hosting costs. But the filing in the district court say, nope. They don't have any responsibility at all to that. Here's what U.S. Attorney Dana Buente said, quote, the government has already completed its acquisition of data from the Carpathia servers authorized by the warrant, which the defendants will be entitled to during discovery. As such, there is no basis for the court to order the government to assume possession of the Carpathia servers or reimburse Carpathia for allocated costs related to their continued maintenance.
Yeah, I mean, we already know that the U.S. court system takes years, particularly on a big case like this. And this is unfortunately a very sad side effect of it, is the U.S. company is basically sitting on possibly $100,000 worth of servers.
Oh, at least.
That have no practical use at this point.
Yeah.
And the U.S. government doesn't care. It's not their money.
Yeah.
And there is monumental amounts of data on these sites that, okay, we all know the fact that these sites are used to download Game of Thrones, True Detective, anything else under the sun, but there's monumental amounts of very legal, valid file sharing that isn't related to that. So tying up these servers just based on potential illegal file sharing, you're denying people their own data that is valid and legal.
Yeah, so they said that they are going to allow Mega Upload to look through the data they took from the servers, but only after they're arraigned, which hasn't happened so far, and it's 3 years on now. And they also said, quote, the United States continues to request that the court deny any effort to impose unprecedented financial or supervisory obligations on the United States relating to the Carpathia servers. Imposing unprecedented financial obligations on the defendants is apparently A-OK.
And that's another thing, okay? If you were some flunky that was busted on a B&E charge or a DUI, you would practically be arraigned either later that day or the next day, depending on when you were arrested.
Yeah.
3 years.
So Mega Upload, a while back, wanted to buy the servers directly to preserve the data. The U.S. and the MPAA both blocked it. And the MPAA has come out again and said that they don't want them to have it. They said they don't mind if users get their files back as long as Mega Upload doesn't get it. Quote, The MPAA member's principal concern is assuring that adequate steps are taken to prevent the MPAA member's content on the Mega servers in Carpathia's possession from falling back into the hands of Mega Upload or otherwise entering the stream of commerce. Hey guys, I think that ship sailed a long time ago.
So, basically you're saying that the process can't go from A to B to C so long as B doesn't get their hands on it.
Yeah, but who else is going to do it? Who else is going to let them have access to their material, especially considering that a lot of this material is quote-unquote pirated, and whoever does might end up hauled into court alongside Mega Upload?
Pretty much, yeah. I think they're not going to go forward until there's some sort of provision in place that basically says, hey, anybody who we found that has all these files hosted of our movies, we want to drag their ass into court, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see the MPAA offering to buy it up and let people have their legal files back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all kind of stuck in the middle of a catch-22, although it actually looks more like a catch-44 or catch-66 at this point.
Because Sarian would be having his head spinning at this lately.
Yeah, so apparently it's going to be up to District Court Judge Liam O'Grady to figure out what to do about all this, and hopefully that'll happen before Carpathia decides they're just going to go ahead and wipe the servers.
Pretty much.
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
So the NSA has been collecting all sorts of information about us online for many, many years now. Oh, but that's okay, because it's all metadata, right? What harm can come from metadata? Well, after one security expert after another trying to explain it, journalist Will Ockenden with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation decided to release his metadata and see what people could find out about from him from that. And what he said was, quote, "The public's analysis has been at times scarily accurate. They've trawled through everything very, very thoroughly. A year of my life has been given a very good going over. They picked up on the major trips, the work times, my habits, and more."
And this isn't anything new. I remember when this first sort of broke out, who's the guy on YouTube? Against the Noise. He made a video on that, and he showed the exact same thing, that you could figure out his work habits, you could see that he went to a doctor's office every Thursday for a condition, that you could figure out where his, you know, parents and in-laws lived.
Yeah, and they were able to follow this guy to work and back. They figured out that most days he took the Manly Ferry, but also some days he got on a bus, and some days he just took his car, and they were able to successfully find out when and what routes he took.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, quote, "While I expected my home and workplace to show up pretty clearly, I was shocked at some of the insights people were able to glean from the data. One reader picked up on the fact that I got stuck at the Spit Bridge near Manly when it lifted up, while another pinpointed when I get off the bus. But it wasn't just the everyday routine things. They figured out the day that he moved from his house in Manly to Redfern, down to the exact date." And he said, quote, "It appears that given enough data over a long period of time, patterns and habits reveal more about you than you realize. Some people joked, I hope they were joking, that I don't get out very much. Looking at the data, I'd have to agree." And they also figured out his Christmas holidays, and they were also able to figure out his siblings, you know, where his brothers and sisters are and when he met up with them. And they also figured out that he had made, in November, a separate trip to Tasmania. And this is the interesting thing about metadata. It'll tell you what happened, you know, where he was or whatever. It's left open to speculation as to why. People had speculated that he went to Tasmania in November because his brother received an award. In reality, he was just setting up his parents' Wi-Fi. But, I mean, if you think about things like what the NSA does, They could look at something like that, make an assumption on it, make an assumption of criminal activity when it was really something innocuous. But, you know, if they come into court with all this information, what do you think the jury is going to believe?
Exactly.
And what was scary is they were also able to figure out when he took flights, right down to the departure time. Although apparently international flights are a little bit harder than the domestic flights. They got the flight numbers for his domestic flights correct, but they weren't able to get the correct destination for international flights.
Shame. Just because we have to know where the terrorists are, we just don't have to know when they're actually landing in America.
Now, the thing to keep in mind about this is they only had Will's metadata. They didn't have his brother's or his mother's or anything like that. If they had had that, too, they would have been able to do a much better job of piecing these things together. So, you know, that makes it even more scary.
Mm-hmm. The idea that it's, quote-unquote, only metadata, when you know who has a phone and you can track it like the NSA can, you can basically Google anything that you're not sure of to fill in the blanks, and you can basically figure out a person's life within an hour.
Yeah, and these were amateurs doing this, just people just trying it just for the lulz. I mean, can you imagine what the people at the NSA who really know what they're doing can figure out?
Mm-hmm.
So he concluded, quote, "I wasn't expecting such a high level of detail. It's plain from the hundreds of responses we received that telecommunications metadata can reveal a significant amount of detail, even when it's collected at a suburb level. While it's true the interception of communications is more intrusive than just metadata, interception requires a warrant. Government agencies do not require a warrant for metadata. Metadata reveals a significant amount of information even before you start looking for additional sources to plug the gaps. While it has been a revealing exercise, parts of the project have also been rather unsettling. Now, please stop digging. It's creeping me out."
Well said.
And again, these are people who are doing this just for the lulz. If he's creeped out by that, how much more should you be creeped out by the NSA or whoever?
I highly recommend the documentary The System that is currently available on Netflix.
Okay.
Which talks quite a bit about the birth of the NSA metadata collection. After 9/11.
Actually, it's been going on a good deal earlier than that. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch that one. I want to watch Citizen 4, and there's another one out called Black Hat. I want to watch those. So, good stuff for your viewing list. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv. So lots of people have fun playing video games, and at least so far, content warnings and ratings notwithstanding, there's not much in the way of regulations requiring games to be government approved before release. With, apparently, one exception. There's a game called Project Evo, which has shown good preliminary results in being able to train the players to ignore distractions and stay focused on tasks, which is really important for people who suffer from disorders such as ADHD. And Matt Omernick, the executive creative director at Akili, who made the game, said, quote, "We've been through 8 or 9 completed clinical trials in all cognitive disorders, ADHD, autism, depression. The qualities of a good video game, things that hook you, what makes the brain snap, engage, and go, could be a perfect vessel for actually delivering medicine." Although it's probably more like therapy than medicine. But they believe this will be a very effective way to reduce or even replace the drugs kids and even some adults take for ADHD.
And that's not even new. I know there were several DS and 3DS games that were shown to really help with the elderly with cognitive issues and to help basically keep brain health good.
Yep. But now we have a game that's being made specifically for that purpose, and that's the problem. Because apparently you can make a game just doing whatever non-important stuff you want and just release it. But as soon as you make a game that's beneficial, it has to be approved by the FDA.
Which doesn't surprise me because the government's been looking for years for any way to get into the video game industry even more.
Yeah, but going through it could, of course, as we've talked about before, take several years and millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars. And, I mean, we're talking about an industry where 3 years is like a lifetime. You're obsolete after 3 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you still have a smartphone from 2012, I don't even think Apple supports iPhone from that year anymore.
Most of them don't. 2 years and they cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something else. What happens when there's a security hole and you have to patch it? Does the patch have to go through FDA approvals as well? And if so, what happens when you've got this zero day around, making you vulnerable to any hacker or even a script kiddie who is on the right mailing list, while the FDA approves your patch?
Yeah, I mean, it's going on government time. The consumer electronics industry in this country is probably the least regulated and most quote-unquote free market industry in this country, and we see how rapidly it innovates and changes, and then once you get the government involved, these things happen.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, how delaying a medicine being put on the market actually puts people at risk. You know, people literally die waiting for these medicines to get approved. And it's not just like one thing here and another thing there. The FDA has authority over something like 25% of all consumer goods in the United States. And they've got a great quote here from Milton Friedman. Put yourself in the position of an FDA bureaucrat considering whether to approve a new proposed drug. There are two kinds of mistakes you can make from the point of view of the public interest. You can make the mistake of approving a drug that turns out to have very harmful side effects. That's one mistake. That will harm the public. Or you can make the mistake of not approving a drug that would have very beneficial effects. That's also harmful to the public. If you're such a bureaucrat, what's going to be the effect on you of those two mistakes? If you make a mistake and approve a product that has harmful side effects, you are a devil incarnate. Your misdeed will be spread on the front page of every newspaper. Your name will be mud. You will get the blame. If you fail to approve a drug that might save lives, the people who would object to that are mostly going to be dead. You're not going to hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also harkening back to Bastiat with the seen and the unseen. You see the people who die when they take a medicine. When someone dies because a medicine isn't available, that isn't quite so obvious. I mean, just consider how many lives might have been saved if we'd had medical marijuana all this time.
Not even just lives been saved, but people who wouldn't be hooked on terrible painkillers and Oxycontin and all that good stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, we can point to individuals like Peter McWilliams. If we can point to one person like that, that has to be repeated thousands and thousands of times over, but there's no way to find them. There's no way to count it.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's all about the competition. A Pfizer representative was quoted in NPR that, quote, game designers should go through the same FDA tests and trials as drug manufacturers. Even though there's absolutely no way a video game can affect you biochemically.
Right, yes. And God forbid someone is able to buy a treatment for... Okay, even if you have to buy a system and a game...
Okay, so like you pay $400, I guess, for an Xbox and then $100 for the game, that's $500.
And also without having to go see a doctor to get a prescription.
Yeah, that's less than a year of paying for the medication, even without considering how much you pay for the doctor visit.
And insurance.
Oh, yeah. Do you get the idea they're just trying to screw up our health?
You know, sometimes like this, it makes me wonder every now and then when the anti-vaxxer woos, when they say that vaccines are just all about health company's profits. Sometimes I wonder. You know?
Well, vaccines aren't because they don't make a lot of money for them, but you see things like this.
I know, she just saying.
But you see things like this, and it's like, yeah, there is this tendency for them to want to sacrifice our health for the profits, which is why this needs to be more of a free market.
Exactly.
And I also have to wonder what's next. Are educational games now going to have to be approved by the Department of Education and fit with the Common Core curriculum?
Oh, God. I grew up playing games like Where is Carmen Sandiego? That taught me probably more about geography than my actual geography class did in middle school.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, would that game even exist?
I remember when they did the PBS series of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, they ended up canceling the series, not because it wasn't popular or people weren't watching, but because the kids got too good at geography. It worked too well. So then they did Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now let's ad block this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to video game company Konami for more ridiculous copyright bogosity. We've seen weird things with copyright, but most of them can be written off to the automated systems that have been all but mandated. Case in point, a few days ago, Patricia Hernandez of Kotaku uploaded to YouTube a self-played Mario Maker level. It amazingly got flagged by a copyright claim from, get this, Playboy. What happened was that Playboy had made a video of the same self-played level, which of course is going to be identical, and uploaded before her. Since Playboy is a YouTube content partner, when Hernandez loaded it, the system automatically flagged it as a copyright violation. And she wasn't the only one. Now, to Playboy's credit, they've been trying to undo these automatic claims as fast as they can, but a content provider doesn't have to respond for 30 days. And obviously that creates a lot of issues for these false positives. Ad-supported channels lose revenue, they lose the ability to upload longer videos or do live shows. Now, the reason I'm bringing up that story is, one, I thought it was worth mentioning, and two, to point out that as bogus as this automated stuff is, it pales in comparison to what Konami did on purpose without automation. And this is regarding a Twitter post from @all_snake, who apparently is Hideo Kojima. John, what can you tell us about Kojima and his relationship with Konami? You know more about that than I do.
Okay. Hideo Kojima is probably, he is arguably the most famous Japanese video game developer of all time. He is primarily known for the Metal Gear series, sort of the too long don't read version of this story. Japanese video game developers for years have been shifting from console development to mobile games, and they aren't as willing to throw, you know, the $50-100 million that you're basically going to need to make a major game nowadays. There was a lot of issues with the development of Metal Gear Solid 5, and Kojima was practically fired about 6 months before the game was going to come out, and basically finished the game as a glorified freelancer. He tweeted a piece of fan art that, you know, was covered under basically any known fair use on his official Twitter account. And Konami actually took that down on a copyright claim.
Yeah, and we have a link to that. But apparently because of this dispute between Konami and Kojima, it seems like they're not really motivated by copyright, but just trying to make life miserable for Kojima.
Yes.
Hey, Konami, that's not what copyright is for.
And that's the other thing, too, that a lot of Japanese video game developers just have a big hard-on for copyright, as Dave would say. Like, Nintendo is notorious for issuing YouTube takedown notices of Let's Play videos.
Yeah, and we've covered before how stupid that is.
Yeah, so it's not a good situation.
So all of that makes Konami this week's biggest Bogani emitter. Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers, backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to blackball this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And this week it goes to the Cumberland County, North Carolina Sheriff's Office for more incredible bogosity around age of consent laws. So what happened is this Fayetteville area high schooler, Cormega Copening, who's 17 years old, got caught in this sexting scandal. Apparently, he was having sex with his girlfriend, who was the same age, and they've been having sex since they were 16, which is the age of consent in North Carolina, and yet he's facing charges of sexually exploiting a minor and facing a possibility of up to 10 years in jail. Now, the minor he is sexually exploiting is not only his girlfriend, but also himself.
Where's that picture, Captain Picard, when we need it?
Oh, watch out for the face palms, because I haven't told you the best part. The best part? They're trying him as an adult. So he's an adult, but he's a minor.
You know, and this is something that when you mix consumer electronics that evolve far more rapidly than any bullshit law can. Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, okay, I think quite a few of us have took kinky pictures with girlfriends we had in high school. You're basically talking about two consenting parties sending themselves naked pictures of each other. What is wrong with that?
Well, then that's the stupid thing about this. It is legal for them to have sex with each other, but not to have pictures of each other. That is insane!
Yeah.
And there's no evidence and no accusation that they were doing this before they were 16. And the only reason anyone else even saw the pictures is because the sheriffs found them when they were searching his phone on a charge that the press apparently hasn't been able to figure out what's going on, but it had nothing to do with sexting. And also, according to the Fayetteville Observer, there's no record of a search warrant.
Sounds like somebody was going fishing there.
So both of them were charged with sexual exploitation. His girlfriend pleaded guilty to a lesser charge, and she's given 12 months of probation. But Copening is facing 2 counts of second-degree exploitation and 3 counts of third-degree exploitation, which, as I said, could end up with him serving 10 years in prison, because I guess we're living in a patriarchy.
No, Shane. This is clearly male exploitation. I mean, he forced that girl to take a selfie and take a nude shot of herself.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, the third-degree charges, which is most of these charges, aren't from the pictures he had of her, but the pictures he had of himself.
He forced her to accept that text message.
That's not even that. It's about him having pictures of himself on his own phone. That's what those charges are.
I got nothing.
Ran out of excuses. It staggers the imagination, doesn't it?
I don't even know what to say again. This is something out of Kafka.
Oh, and if he's convicted, he'll have to register as a sex offender.
A sex... I got nothing.
I mean, is there any point in having a sex offender list anymore? There are so many people on those lists for completely bogus reasons. It's like they're deliberately trying to pad them out somehow.
You know, and sadly, it's a lot like DUI convictions. There's basically just a cottage industry of people exploiting the people on these charges because of all the BS steps that you have to do. It's a whole big money-making industry.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
So all of that makes the Cumberland County, North Carolina Sheriff's Office this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this For Depressing Phone Sex, Dial 1-900-ALFALFA edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Jonathan Lochey for joining me.
Always glad to be here, Shane.
Until next time, here's a quote from Mark Twain. Only one thing is impossible for God, to find any sense in any copyright law on the planet. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Did I know 100 numbers even exist anymore?
I don't know.
Not the
same. That's from Mystery Science Theater 3000, so that was like, you know, 20 years ago or whenever that was on.
Okay.